Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our program, The Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local minister at the Harrisburg Church of Christ. Thank you for listening this morning. Please become a regular listener. At the end of our broadcast, you'll be given our service times at the Harrisburg Church of Christ. We cordially invite you to any of all these services. You will always be warmly received. We are studying the book of Revelation, and this morning we're going to look at the events of chapter number 6. Really, if you look at the first few chapters of this book, they've really been very easy to understand. The letters to the seven churches of Asia show the character, the temptations, and the rewards of the church if they remain faithful. The throne scene in chapter 4 reassures the Christian of the sovereign power of God, both in creation and in the redemption that will be found through Christ. And in chapter number 5, we see the opening of the sealed book to the one and the only one who is worthy to open that book, and that is the Lamb that has been slain. But now as we open verse number 6, we see the contents of the book begin to unravel. And now we're going to see the inevitable outcome of what is happening on the earth. We see that the first 6 seals are mentioned here in Revelation chapter 6. The first seal in verses 1 and 2 is the white horse. There are no lines or action other than the riding of the horse. From the color of the horse and the description of the rider, we must identify him. In the identification, the white horse, and he who sat on him had a bow and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. The some suggest that this represents the Christ, and that indeed might be true. He is elsewhere pictured on a white horse, but yet, towards the end of this letter, in Revelation 19, which color represents purity? The crown suggests royalty, and bow represents his means of overcoming his enemy. I believe perhaps that this is an opening to demonstrate that the persecution on the earth is going to continue, that Rome is going to continue her onslaught against the church. The second seal is the red horse in verses 3 and 4. Wherever Christ makes his entrance, a sort of persecution usually follows. 2 Timothy 3 verse 12 assured us of that. The rider of this horse is given power to take peace from the earth. This probably refers to the persecution rather than the war between the nations. The sword given to him is the same sword, a sacrificial sword, but is different from that word, and it's a long, heavy sword of warfare. So it demonstrates that this one's going to have power and ability to make war. And then you have the black horse in verse 5 and 6. The pair of balances are in the rider's hand, and a voice was heard saying, a measure of wheat for a penny. This was equivalent to saying a whole day's wage for a penny, for enough wheat or barley for one person for one day. This represents economic hardship, which along with the sword follows the gospel. This is not famine, for one could get all that he wants provided he can pay, but a certain class of people will be hard-pressed. Believers were oppressed and crowded out of jobs, forced to take jobs of low wages because they insisted on being true to their convictions. Hurt not the oil and the wine. These comforts of life are not affected. The rich continue to enjoy their food and the comforts of life, while the poor hardly have enough. And so what you see is the black horse represents famine and pestilence, and food and supplies are going to become difficult to come by. And then you have the pale horse in verse 7 and 8. This rider was named Death and Hades. Followed with him, this horse had a sickly, gruesome color, symbolic of disease and death. This seems to represent common woes of pestilence of mankind in general, for he was given power to kill a fourth part of the earth with sword, with hunger and death, and the beast of the earth. Add to these common woes of mankind the specific persecution that were being brought on the saints, and one can easily understand the agonizing pleas that we will see in the next seal. Death and power to kill, sword, hunger and death, all are coming, all have already happened, and it will continue. And then you have the fifth seal in verses 9 through 11, and again, this is understandable. I want us to read verses 9 through 11 in the text. It says, "And when they opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of the Lord and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer, until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. Now, in this particular, see, these are the martyrs who have been put to death and killed for their faith. The cry of these martyrs should not be seen as one of an angry appeal for vengeance, but it's a spirit that would be unworthy of any who would call themselves a child of God, because we know vengeance belongs to God, Romans chapter 12, verse 17 and following. But their cry instead is one for justice and vindication, that God would vindicate them, His truth, His cause, and His church, and all the hurtful things that have been done to the martyr saints. The agonizing pleas reveal the yearning of saints for the day when the majesty and holiness and the sovereignty and the righteousness of God will be publicly revealed for all to see. Avengement is sought, which is just punishment for wrongdoing, not vengeance. This is different. This is not retaliation. This is justice being administered. But notice, these martyred saints are given white robes, which is a symbol of righteousness, joy, glory, and victory. But this is a message of triumph and tragedy. The days of martyrdom have not yet been completed. A further time of testing will follow. But the Lord will come, justice will be vindicated, and the martyrs will share in with the great victory. You see, they want vindication. They want God to avenge Himself with righteous judgment upon those who were persecuting and seeking to destroy. And so they want to know how long. Again, they have to be patient. They're given robes of white, and they're told to wait. Wait for what? Wait until the other of their brethren will be killed or martyred for the cause of Christ. That the number is not yet complete. That there's going to be more persecution, more death, and more men and women who will be slain for the cause of Christ. This leads us to believe that these horses represent the continual persecution that's going to come upon Rome, by Rome, upon the church. And they're going to have power to do that for a little while longer. But then we come to the sixth seal in chapter 6, in verse 12 through 17, and it's seen as an earthquake. Old Testament writers use frequently these terms to signify a great day of the Lord in some type of judgment against wickedness. We see this kind of language in Joel 2, verse 10, Isaiah 13, verse 10, and Hosea 10, and verse 8. All of these things usually represent some type of judgment that God is making. And so this is judgment language, symbolic judgment language. These changes are not necessarily exact events, but pictures as if these occurred. The sun turning black as sackcloth, the moon becomes as blood, stars fell from the earth, heaven departed as a scroll rolled up, and every mountain of the island was moved out of its place. Ladies and gentlemen, these are not talking about literal events, as so many today want to describe these things as the day of Armageddon or the battle of Armageddon or the beginning of the 7 years of tribulation. This is talking about judgment. This is a judgment that God's going to make upon the wicked. And in this case, this judgment is going against Rome. And so this great day of the Lord, as it is described throughout Old Testament apocalyptic writing, has always represented that there is going to be some type of judgment made. Why is that important? Well, that is telling us that God is aware of what's happening. God is aware of the persecution and devastation that is being handed down by Rome. God cares, and He understands that it is intense, and even more are going to die. But it's definitely a mistake to take these events to refer to time and circumstance of the final judgment of the world. The martyrs under the altar have just been informed in verse 11 that the human story is incomplete, and more faithful Christians are to be added to their list of martyrs for their faith. The judgment here is a judgment on the ongoing events of history in which are being addressed in this letter, and that is the onslaught of Rome against the church. Much like the day of the Lord in the Old Testament prophets to show that God is going to render a judgment. A collapse of the order in human affairs is being predicted here. Rome is not going to stand forever and continue to persecute the church without an end. God is going to shake the wicked empire to its very foundations and then he's going to shatter it completely. The terror that the time is stressed by the things predicted to accompany Rome's fall, the rolling of the heavens as a scroll, the flight of mountains and islands, the stark terror felt by all mankind. We knew this stresses that these horrible hopelessness of the wicked to stand opposed against God. God's plans cannot be overthrown. The wicked will not have final victory. The wicked will never be able to defeat the Creator of all life, nor his eternal plan. The dissolving element, the earthquake, falling of stars, add to their terror. Their end is assured. It is guaranteed. They will not win. They will not succeed. And they will not overcome. They will have their victory for a while, but it is temporary. God is going to bring it to a shattering conclusion. And then we want to look at verse 15, for it is indeed important. In verse 15 it says, "And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders and mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in caves and in rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains, Fall on us, hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" You see, those who have opposed God, they're going to want shelter. They're going to try to find security and hope, but there will be none. No cave to hide, no rocks to fall on. They know they cannot stand against him who sits on the throne or the Lamb. They know that they're outnumbered. They know that their doom is certain, and they know that there is no hope. And then the proverbial question is asked in verse number 17. And it ends by a quoting of the wicked of wicked men, "Who is able to stand?" That indeed is a good question. Who is able to endure when the wrath of God is revealed upon the earth against Rome? Who's going to be able to stand? Who's going to be able to survive when God is going to pour out this judgment against the sin and the devastation and the death and the hardship that Rome has put his people through? They are going to pay. They are going to pay a high price. They are going to be subdued. They are going to be overcome, and they are going to be defeated. But when that happens, who is able to stand? Who is going to be able to withstand this onslaught? Who's going to survive? Who's going to be able to go forward? That question will be answered and begins to be answered in chapter number 7. What we need to see in 6 is that he's telling them the end is not yet. There is more persecution to come. They're going to have success temporarily. But those who are slain are told to wait. They're given their robes of victory. They have been faithful. They're going to be rewarded. But they're to wait. And the earthquake and the judgment language denotes that God is going to vindicate them. He's going to punish the wicked. And he's going to make them pay for the unrighteous and the acts against his people. But he will do it in his own time. Who is able to stand? That question will be answered as we begin to look next week at chapter number 7. No, we're not talking about the end of time. We're talking about the end of the Roman Empire. We're talking about the great judgment that God will bring on Rome. Tune in again next week. Thank you.